The following audio is presented by Grace Church. For more about us, visit discovergrace.com, or you can download our free app by searching Grace Church Orlando on your phone or tablet. Now, we hope you enjoy the message.
So we're glad you're with us this morning. Just a couple of things as we've been going through the book of John together, and specifically as we've been in this most recent series of messages, we've been doing something together as a church called the Evangelism Initiative. And what we've asked of you to do is to be praying for three people that you know need Jesus, three people who don't have that relationship with Jesus in your life. I hope that's going well. I hope that you're seeing the fruit of that already. I know that as I've prayed for my three, that God's already done some things. There's one of my three who there's a relational difficulty. We weren't even speaking when I started praying for him. And we spoke last night. The Lord's restored that relationship through praying for him. And there's been a lot of cool things happening. And so I hope that you're encouraged by that. I hope that you're doing that. And then also I want to remind you, October 22nd is our invite day. And so we're encouraging everybody, invite one person that day, invite them to church that day. It's going to be a special day for them and for you. So we encourage you to think of that. Who's going to be your one? And what a great place like to be, to invite people to church. We're in Central Florida, one of the most unchurched areas in the country. Winter Garden itself is actually the most unchurched per person in Central Florida. So what a great place. I mean, people are there. And you know what, Angela and I, as we've spoken to people, invited them to church, we've never had a bad response since we've been here. No one has run away from us screaming, which I would also not put in the category of bad, because what a great story. But literally just everyone we talked to, it's been easy. Yesterday, for example, so I found our old Nintendo Wii, a little gaming system for all of you who don't buy into Nintendo, and I'll pray for you. But anyway, we found that, and I said, you know what, we need to sell this, it's worth something. So I put it on an app called Let Go, and this guy wanted to meet me yesterday and buy it, and I said, look, man, I can't meet up with you today, but tomorrow, he lives in Orlando. I said, I go to the 5:30 service at our Orlando campus, why don't you meet me? You meet me in the parking lot, like before at 5:30, you meet me afterwards, whatever. And he goes, okay, my wife and I will come listen to the sermon. And I went, wait, hang on a second. No, I wasn't, what? And he goes, yeah, we'll come to the sermon. I said, no, I mean, those two things aren't connected, right? Like, you can just buy the Wii, all right? Like, you don't have to come. I'm excited you want to come to church, but you don't have to. He goes, no, I mean, we're already there. So, I mean, we invite your one, all right? There are people out there, and that's all they want. They just want to be invited. So let's invite our one. So we're in John chapter 12. We finished up John chapter 11 last week. So if you have a Bible, if you want to use one of the paper Bibles that are on your row, you can turn to page 769. John chapter 12, verse 1 through 11. John chapter 12. Verse 1 through 11. So John chapter 11, we saw Jesus do something absolutely phenomenal. He brought Lazarus back from the dead, right? So ministering to Mary and Martha, the sisters of Lazarus, and we saw him bring him back from the dead, and started the march towards his death. That's when the Pharisees said, from this day forward, we're going to find a way. We're going to arrest him. We're going to kill him. And that started there in John chapter 11. In fact, the rest of the book of John is the last week in Jesus' life. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. You have the entire book of John. We've been through half of it. The first half was all these other things in Jesus' ministry covering these 3 years. And then these last pages, this last half of the book is 6 days of Jesus' life. So let's look there in verse 1. Let's read these scriptures together. Verse 1. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served. Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus said, leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me. When a large crowd of the Jews learned that Jesus was there, they came, not only on account of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to put Lazarus to death as well, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. This is an important narrative. I mean, last week when we talked about, these past few weeks, when we talked about Lazarus being raised from the dead. That's an important narrative. But in the four Gospels, how many times does that account of Lazarus being raised from the dead show up? Once, just here in John. It's not in Matthew, it's not in Mark, it's not in Luke. But this right here is in all four Gospels. It's in all four Gospels. It's an incredibly important account. And the climax of the story, the big part of this narrative, is Mary's worship there in verse 3. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard, anointed the feet of Jesus, wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. Now that's the central part of that story. That's where our focus is going to be today. So let's answer this question. What is nard? Anybody in here put on nard this morning? No? And by the way, I'm going to say it about 1,000 times because it's my new favorite word, nard. But anyway, nard. Did anybody put that on this morning? No. It was an incredibly expensive ointment, a perfume, right, that you would put on your skin or put in your hair. And it's an extravagant gift that she gives. It's incredibly costly. It's incredibly costly. We see that this was a pound of this perfume, a pound of it, and it's expensive. It wasn't locally sourced, right? It came from the Himalayas. So they had to get it from the Himalayas there. And there was no Amazon Prime. Could you imagine? There wasn't anything like that, right? So it was expensive to get it there. So not only was it costly probably in the Himalayas, it was incredibly more costly there because of the transport to get it there. And it said that it was a year's wage. It was worth a year's wage. Now, if you were to take minimum wage here in Florida, $8.10, I checked. If you were to take that, if you were going to work 40 hours a week for an entire year, then that would be $16,848. Time to up that minimum wage. But anyway, $16,848, a year's wage. Now, if you were to come in here and say, you know what, I need to make a gift to the church, I need to give an offering to the church, and you handed me $16,848, two things. Number one, I'd be like, that's an oddly specific number. But number two, I'd be like, this is great. This is a huge gift. This is a big deal. Not only was it costly, but it was a complete gift. She completely gave it. And another account in the Gospels, not in John, but another account in the Gospels, it tells us that she brought it in an alabaster flask, right? An alabaster flask. So she broke this beautiful, expensive flask open. There was no putting it back in, right? There was no, all right, well, Jesus, you got some of it, and now I need the rest of it back because I got a date later and I got to smell nice. No. It was all of it. And when you see how much it was a pint. Do you know how much a pint is? That's 16 ounces. If you and I were to go to the Coke machine and buy a bottle of Coke, that's 16 ounces. Now, how much of that do you think ended up on Jesus? Like, seriously, how much of that absorbed into his skin? How much of that was in his hair? How much of that? In two of the accounts we have in the Gospels, the anointing happens on his head. In this account, John focuses on the feet. Regardless, if she put it on his head, put it on his feet, how much of that? If I were to get you up here, right? If I were to get you up here, who in here probably has the best looking feet? Joe. Okay, so if I were to get you up here, take your shoes off, right? And these people in the front row did not pass out. And I poured a whole thing of Coke, a 16 ounces on your feet. How much is going to stick on your feet? Not much, right? Most of that's going to end up on the floor. It was a complete gift. And what did Judas say about that? Well, Judas says this. What does he say there in verse 5? Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? What's Judas saying? Well, if you don't know what he's saying, the disciples put it this way in Matthew's account. Matthew 26:8, they say this. Why this waste? That's what they call it. They call it a waste. It's a complete waste. You could have sold some of it and given it to the poor. I mean, you could have sold, like, think about that $16,000 number. You could have gotten $10,000 for 90% of it, and you could have still used thousands of dollars on Jesus. Why not do that? It's a complete waste. And what does Jesus do here? I mean, when you think about that, like that's just, you don't need that much. My kids, so I have four kids, again, almost all on purpose. And one of the things as they get older is, like, part of the job of a parent, I think your hardest part is getting them to be kind of self-sufficient. Like once they bathe themselves, once they feed themselves, once they dress themselves and buckle themselves in the car, 90% of parenthood's done, right? Like that, like, you did it. Good job. And so I'm really trying to get my kids, like, to my boys specifically, like, would you just go take a shower? One, because, like, they smell, but two, like, it's easy, right? You don't have to fill up the bathtub. You don't have to worry about them falling over and, like, drowning or anything. So, like, all right, just go, boys, go take a shower. So I had two boys in there, and I sent them in, Jude and Whit. They were in the shower, and I said, all right, here you go. And then I said, all right, hold out your hand. I'm going to squirt the shampoo in your hand. and the body wash or whatever. And they said, no, let us do it. And so I was like, you've done it a lot. So surely, you know, I said, okay, guys, just put enough on your, like, just squeeze a little on your head or whatever. And they said, yeah, we got this, right? And it wasn't like, look, this was the good stuff, all right? This wasn't Target brand. This was Paw Patrol brand, all right? So, you know, we paid more because the bottle's in the shape of a dog. And so anyway, so I give it to them. And then, like, I'm waiting. And finally, the bottle comes out. Empty, like absolutely empty. And I was like, well, I made a mistake. And so my son, I hear my son from behind, he goes, I need a washcloth. And so like I look in there and he is the bubble man. Like he is just head to toe just covered in bubbles. And he's like, I need a washcloth. And I was like, no, you need something more than that, right? Like this is ridiculous. And it's just an absolute waste. And they're thinking the same thing. Most of what she pours on Jesus is on the floor. But Jesus defends her. Look at there in verse 7. Jesus said, leave her alone. So that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me. Jesus defends this as an appropriate worship of him. Jesus defends it. And so basically what he's saying is that I am more worthy. Now listen to this. I am more worthy of your worship than the poor are of your service. Do you hear that? Jesus is putting the worship of himself that high up. It's incredible. And Jesus defends this worship. And he adds something even more incredible to it. In Matthew 26, in his defense of her, in verse 10 through 13, he basically says the same thing. He says, why do you trouble this woman? She's done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. And pouring this ointment on my body, she's done it to prepare me for burial. And then he adds a sentence, verse 13, 26, 13. Truly I say to you, wherever this gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Jesus ties her waste to the gospel. Wherever you hear the gospel, this will be told. They are now forever tied together. What is Jesus saying? Jesus is saying, if you really understood my value, if you really understood the good news, who I am and what I'm giving to you, then you would waste your life too, just like her. You would pour everything out just like her. And that is the goal of the gospel that Jesus is revealing to us now. The goal of the gospel is to waste your life on Jesus. That's the goal. Pour everything out. Extravagant worship. That's the goal of the gospel. To bring you to that place where you waste your life on him. Where you pour it all out on him and for him. And we read it last week, Matthew 10:39. Jesus said, whoever finds his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life, or as we're saying today, whoever wastes his life for my sake will find it. And so we should be like Mary. We should again waste our life pouring it out for him. But where does this extravagant worship come from? Where does it come from? Because we could all agree, like, I think if I were to ask any of you in this room, I don't think anybody in here is going to be like, nah, we shouldn't worship Jesus like that. That's too much. No. I hear what you're saying, but I'm siding with Judas Iscariot on this one, right? Anybody want to side with Judas? No, I don't think so, right? So anyway, we all can read this and we can kind of agree with this. And we could even say like, okay, now I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to pour my life out like that. Well, you know what? Extravagant worship is not manufactured. It can't be. We want it to be, but it can't be. Like, haven't you ever been at an event and everybody around you is excited about that event, and you're just like not, like you're not feeling it. And you want to be excited, but you're not feeling it. I'm trying to think of the last time that happened to me. Oh, I went to a soccer game yesterday. So we went to the Orlando City game yesterday, and there were some crazy fans. Like we walked in under, like if you've ever been to the stadium, there's this section of people that sit behind the goal. And they stomp the whole time, and they scream, and they like chant things or whatever. It's like idol worship. But anyway, so they're there, and they're doing their whole thing, and like my kids walk in, and immediately like their hands are over their ears, and they're like, "Where did you bring us to, Daddy?" Right? Like this is not Disney World. And so anyway, so they are not enjoying it. So we go up in our seats. And there are people, like, there's a guy behind me from England, so he's like all about soccer. He kept calling it football. I was like, It's not football, it's soccer. But anyway, so he's like into it. And so every now and then he would like scream and I'm like, oh, what? And I look around and I'd be like, nope, still a bunch of guys on the field and 0-0, right? Like, why are you so excited about this? And they're just, you know, they're getting all excited to it. And I wanted to be excited, right? I wanted to be. If they had like, if it was like free jersey day or whatever, I'd have worn three jerseys, right? I would have like just put all of them on. I would have painted my face if they had it there. I wanted to care and I just couldn't. It just didn't matter to me. And so our extravagant worship is not manufactured. You can't will it to happen. You can't just say, well, Grant said we should, and he read the scripture, so we should, right? Like, okay, time to go extravagantly worship Jesus, trying to pour out my entire life. You can't do that. Extravagant worship must be inspired. It can't be manufactured, but it must be inspired. And so I want to use Mary as our example, because Mary's extravagant worship, she didn't just wake up one day and go, okay, time to do something crazy for Jesus. I don't know. This was inspired. This naturally flowed out of her. And so let Mary be our example. If you go back to Luke chapter 10, you go back two chapters, we see an instance where Jesus is visiting Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And one of the things we see is that Martha is making a meal for Jesus. And where is Mary? Luke 10:39. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. Martha was furious, right? Like, I'm in the kitchen. Mary's like sitting down, chilling with Jesus. Like, I want to be chilling with Jesus, but I'm here making food because somebody's got to do it, right? And Jesus says this to her. She's chosen the good portion. So Mary was inspired to extravagant worship because she spent time with Jesus. She spent time at the feet of Jesus. We find her here, back where? At the feet of Jesus. She wanted to be intimately known and to intimately know Jesus. And what did that do? It inspired in it. She saw his value. One of my favorite songs is Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus, right? What does it say? Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of the earth will grow strangely dim in light of his glory and grace. The more time we spend with Jesus, the more value we see, the more we fall in love with who he is, because it's the more time we spend with him. Yesterday, there was a wedding at the church in Orlando, and I watched the video. I wasn't invited. It's okay. I'll get over it. But anyway, I watched the video afterwards, and you're just inspired by it, right? You see like that, you know, like you look at it, and you see him, and they're just talking about like the best days are ahead, right? And you just like, it's just so inspiring. And then you're at the same time, you're kind of like, you have no idea what you're doing. But anyway, you're like, you're inspired by it. It's so great. Well, how did they get there? They spent time together. Like, they didn't meet the first day and go, hey, do you want to go to Chili's? And she was like, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, right? Like, that doesn't happen. Chili's is magical, but that doesn't happen, right? It was just spending time with it. And in the same way, like, our extravagant worship, to inspire that, it's just getting to know him better. And you might say, yeah, I can see how you're making that tie there in the relationship, but sometimes there are things that we learn about people and it makes the relationship worse. You know, like, I wish I hadn't known that side of that person, right? Yeah, that could be true, but Jesus is perfect. The only thing that you don't know about Jesus, you know that Jesus is beautiful now, you know he's amazing now. The only thing you don't know is that he's more amazing. The only thing you don't know is that he's more beautiful. The more revelation you get of him will just inspire in you more worship, more extravagant worship. So if we want to inspire that in ourselves, we need to follow Mary's example. Jesus told the parable of the pearl of great price. He said, look, there's a guy one time and he was looking for these pearls and he found this pearl that was worth more than all the other pearls in the entire world. So he sold everything and he went and got it. Did he have to sell everything? Probably not. This guy probably had some money. What was he doing? He was like, no, this is worth everything. I will give everything for this. Mary, in the same way, the more time she spent with Jesus, the more she saw his value and the more she gave everything. The same for us. I want to be a person whose life is marked by extravagant worship of Jesus. I want to be a person who wastes their life on Jesus, just pouring it all out. Fine, you can have it all. But that is not going to come from my willpower of wanting to be that person. That is going to be inspired by spending time at his feet. The second thing that Mary teaches us is Mary was inspired to extravagant worship because she was thankful. You know, if they made a talking doll of me, right? Number one, be one good-looking little doll. But number two, that talking doll, I would have two paternal catchphrases. Are you ready? My two dad phrases are pretty much these. Stop that. Like, that's number one. I say that all the time. Stop that. Stop it. Stop that. Stop. Stop what you're doing. Stop. My son, Whit, I told you he was, we've been potty training him, which means that, like, he'll go to the potty and then he just won't put anything back on, right? Like he'll take his big boy underwear off, go to the potty, and then like he'll run around the house, right? And he thinks it's hilarious because it is. And he'll run around the house, right? And all I'm saying, stop it. Stop. Stop that. Stop being naked, right? Like, which is a weird thing I never thought I'd have to say. But anyway, I'm like, stop, stop, stop doing that, right? And he thinks it's absolutely hilarious. So that's one of my catchphrases is stop that. The other one is, what do you say? Like, how many times do you say that as a parent? How many times have you said that? What do you say? Right? I have to imagine that, like, that song repeats in your head all the time. Like, as soon as I said that, did you hear your parents' voices? I did. Like, I hear my parents' voices even now. What do you say? Right? And so my kids, like, they just, do you guys know those things that at Walmart that you put, like, when you walk in, you put a quarter in and you turn it and, like, this little capsule comes out. Does anybody know the name of this? Does anybody know the name of it? I had to look it up. I'm, like, shocked. It has a name. Gashapons is what they're called. Gashapons. There you go. You learned something today. All right. So anyway, gashapons. My kids think I am a gashapon, right? They think me and my wife are gashapons. Whatever they need, they like, it's just, it's there, right? Like they wake up in the morning and they're like, I'm cold. Clothe me, right? Like, and we clothe them, right? Or they're hungry. Like, feed me. I want more of this. I want more of that, right? We are just gashapons. And I have to always say, what do you say? What do you say? What do you say? And then there are those moments where they're truly thankful. Where they've stopped, they've thought about what we've done for us, and they create the most genuine and special moments of affection. One time we had come back from taking the kids somewhere, probably Disney, and we had come back and we were at home and they were doing their homework, and Max, my oldest, he runs over to me. I'm sitting at my desk and he runs over to me and he says, Daddy, thank you for taking me today. Thank you for taking all of us to Disney World, wherever we went. Thank you for taking me. And then he crawled up in my lap and he gave me a hug. And I was like, no problem, son. Right? Like it was this incredible moment of affection. And he does that all the time. And you know what always prompts it? It's always he thinks about something that we've done for him and he's truly thankful. And it inspires this outpouring of affection. Mary did the same thing. I mean, think about it. Think about where Mary was. Mary was going to have dinner with her brother that she thought she would never see again. Do you understand? Her brother that she prepared for burial herself. Her brother that she mourned for 4 days. Her brother that she watched die. And the person who gave him back to her was going to be at dinner with them. What would you do if you're Mary? You sit around, you're looking like, what can I give him, right? Like, what in the world can I give? I think this Subway gift card has a little bit of money left on it. Like, no. You're looking around going, what's the best that I have? What in the world could I possibly give the man who's given me everything back, right? What could I give him? This $20,000 bottle of what? Absolutely. It's yours. It's this extravagant worship. It's inspired by true thanksgiving. And we need to be in the same habit. I mean, think about it. Think about all you have to be thankful for. Like right now, think about it. Not only do you have everything good in your life because all good things come from the Father of Lights, right? So you have every good thing. You have your family. You have health. You have this community. You have this freedom and all of these things. But also, even bigger than all of that, God looks at you, as we just sang, God looks at you and he sees you as righteous. Because of what Jesus has done for you. We sit here in confession and we don't do it to condemn ourselves. Instead, we do it and we get to celebrate that God looks at us and he's faithful. And even though I am just as unfaithful today as I was yesterday, God says, you are still mine. I will still give you all of myself. What in the world can we give to the one who's given everything back to us? So our worship of God, us giving everything to him, it's inspired. It's not manufactured. It's inspired by what? By genuine thanksgiving. So like Mary, we see the value of Jesus when we spend time at his feet and when we give thanks. And so like Mary, we want to give him everything. So I think the question we need to ask ourselves in every area of our lives is, how can I waste my life here? How can I pour it all out for Jesus here? And I mean every area. You think about financially. We sacrifice to give to God because he's worth it. He's worth it. God, I don't, this stuff isn't as important to me. My money isn't as important to me. You matter to me. My cell phone, I pay a lot of money for that. My internet, my cable, I pay a lot of money for that. But you are more valuable to me than these things. I mean, Mary gave a gift that would make me uncomfortable to receive. Like, again, if you were to walk up to me and say, I need to give a gift to the church, here's $20,000. Like, the first thing I would do is immediately try to go catch that because I don't want you to change your mind. But the second thing I would do, I'd be uncomfortable. Are you sure? Like, seriously, pastorally, I would feel responsible to make sure that you know what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I would be uncomfortable with that. And yet, like, Mary gave a gift like that. She was marked by this incredible generosity. And why? Because he deserves it. He deserves all that we have. John 3:16 says what? For God so loved the world that he what? He gave. He gave everything for us. How can we not do the same? And so a question that's uncomfortable for me to ask, but if I were to pull up everybody's giving records who are members of this church, what does that say about you? What does that say about your devotion to God? What does that say about your pouring yourself out financially for him? If I were to go and get your bank account and I were to track down everything that you spent, right? What does that tell? What story does that tell? Does that tell a life of people who give all to God that because you've given so much, I'm going to give back? Pastor Mike, this past Tuesday morning, he was talking about this, and he was talking about tithing. He's talking about giving, you know, like giving money to supporting the ministry of what God's doing here at this church. And he said, give a gift to God. Don't tip him. Don't tip God. Give him a gift, right? And he said that, and I was like, oh, snap. Right? Like, I was like, oh, like, how many times have I done that? You know, you sit here and they're like, hey, if you're not ready to give, you can give, like, you can text to give. I'm like, yeah. I got you, God. Go get you a Happy Meal, right? Like, here you go. Here's 20. I can text 20, right? But how many times, like, instead, what's a gift look like? I'll tell you what a gift looks like. We've got, I have four kids. My sister-in-law has three, and they're about to adopt three more. That's three birthdays, right? And I will be the best uncle they have. Do you understand? I will be, all right? And so that means great uncle presents, right? Like every time their birthday comes along, I want them to be excited about what they get from their parents, from their grandparents, and from Uncle G, right? Like you better be looking in the mail. When's Grant's present going to be here? Like, so... You know what? To give that gift, it requires us to sit down, to look at our money and say, what can we say? How much can we give? What are we going to give up to give a gift like that? In the same way, what does that show? It shows value. God, you are valuable. We will sit down and we will sacrifice for you in this area of our life. So financially, we give everything. And we give everything socially. I mean, what did Mary do? She wiped Jesus' feet with her hair. Which, I mean, okay, sounds a little weird, but when you think about, like, for socially speaking, like, respectable Jewish women would not be seen with their hair down, ever. They would not be seen with their hair down. Like, right now, some of you in here, shame, right? Like, they would not be seen with their hair down. In fact, it was a sign of loose morals. Like, if you were to be seen with your hair down, you were potentially, like, a harlot. You're potentially a prostitute. Like, it was a big, big deal. And what does Mary do? Mary doesn't come in and go, hey guys, just making sure I am not a woman of the streets, right? Like I've just got to do this. No. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. She's worshiping Jesus. So she puts her hair down and she humbles herself in this way. And so sometimes we give away ourselves socially. Our social lives exist not to make us look cool, but to make Jesus look great. That's why our social lives exist. So sometimes we look like a fool to make Jesus look great. I'll give you an example. There's a lady in my old church who, as you're speaking to her, she would thank God audibly while you're speaking to her. Let me give you an example, because I know you're sitting there going, huh? All right, so we'd be sitting there talking, and I'd be like, oh, man, you won't believe it. So this past week, Angela and I, we had had a really long week, and you know what? Someone offered to keep our kids, and we were able to go have a date night. I can't tell you the last time we had a date night. And she would go, well, thank you, Lord, that's so kind. And I'd be like, I'm sorry, what now? Right? Like, where is he? Right? And so anyway, she would just constantly say that. Or she'd be telling me about something. She'd be like, oh man, I've had a really great week. You know, she was 96, I think. Yeah. She's 96 years old. And so she would be like, oh, I just had a good week. My knee finally worked this week, right? I was able to stand up more than I normally get to stand up. And thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. And I'd be like, what is happening? And I tell you, at first, it really caught me off guard. But then, like, you know what? I don't think ever once she sat there and thought, you know, socially, is this okay? No, what was going through her head? Does he deserve it? Absolutely he does. So socially, I don't care. And you know what? I'll tell you what it did for me. It inspired something in me. I want to be more thankful because of her. She honored the Father, didn't care what I thought, and it made me want to honor the Father more, right? And so socially, we give up everything because he deserves it. Physically, are you giving your life away physically? Now, here's what I mean by that. If you were to go into my house right now and you were to look in my refrigerator, you would find, vitamin water, and you would find vegetables, and I can't even say it with a straight face. You know what you'd find? You'd find Coke, vanilla Coke. You'd find go in my freezer, just ice cream. If you were to go in my pantry, there's nothing in there that is natural. Everything has been made by man because we are smart. But you know what? You know what? As I think about that, like, I have to give myself to the Father physically. So I'm not going to have the metabolism of a hummingbird forever, right? My heart can still get pretty jacked up by not taking care of myself. Physically, I can be out of shape. Even though I'm thin, I can still be out of shape. And I started to think, am I giving myself to the Father physically? Like, am I taking care of my body so that I can serve other people for a lot longer than most people do? I don't think I am. And I need to make a change. Because I want to pour out to him physically. Am I taking care of my body so that I can be there for my kids and I can lead my grandkids spiritually? Because I'll be around. I don't think I am. And I need to make a change. Why? Because Father, you deserve it. You deserve it. I'm going to take care of this so that you can use me more because I want to pour myself out. I think about with illnesses. You know, like when I get sick, I don't know, like when my wife gets sick, like she's probably sick right now and I don't even know it, right? Like she is a warrior, right? Like she's, you know, she will just take care of all the kids and she'll do what she's got to do. And she'll be like, by the way, I had pneumonia last week. What? Right? Like she's a warrior. When I get sick, like when I don't feel good, I'm like, well, time to die and I'll go lay in a dark corner. Like that's just me. And so I started to think, like, with our illnesses, are we pouring ourselves out to God? What I mean is, are we suffering well for the glory of God? Are we not focused on our own pity, and are we not focused on what people can do for us, or instead are we suffering well for the glory of God? John Piper, one of my favorite pastors, theologians, authors, I named my daughter after him. Her name is not John, it's Piper. And so in his book, he had cancer, and he wrote a book, Don't Waste Your Cancer. The book's like this long. I highly recommend it to anybody. I don't care if you have cancer or not. Read it. It's phenomenal. And in the book, here's what he wrote. Cancer does not win if we die. It wins if we fail to cherish Christ. John Piper says, the goal of my recovery from cancer, the goal for my battle with cancer is not to live longer. The goal is to cherish Christ more. Why would you say that? Because again, his life is what? He's wasting it on Jesus. I'm not trying to just survive. I'm not trying just to live because that's what I want. I want to cherish you more. And I want people to cherish you because of how I suffer well. So physically, we pour ourselves out. With our time, are you giving your life away? You know, we have Discover Grace after this. If you're interested in learning more about our church, potentially joining the church, we have a free meal in the media room. I don't know what else I have to say to you. Free food. Just come join us in there and we'll learn more about it. But one of the things that you're going to learn is that the majority of our staff is volunteer. The majority of our staff is volunteer, and they give all of their time. It's crazy. It's crazy how much time they give. I want to single some people out, but I won't because I love you, and I know you'd be incredibly embarrassed. But there are people here that are here incredibly early this morning, and they'll be the last people to leave, and they give everything. And I'll tell you what, we were going to make a change to Discover Grace. We weren't necessarily going to have it on site. We're going to do something different, which would be less set up and whatever, but some things changed yesterday. And so I contacted somebody yesterday, and I said, look, I know it's short notice, so if you can't do it or whatever, but could we have this set up or whatever? He was like, yeah, absolutely, done. And this guy drives all week for his work. All week. He drives like an hour and a half, like to get to work, like an hour and a half. I'll drive 15 minutes. He'll drive like an hour and a half. Why? Why does he keep serving here? Why does he keep giving and giving and giving? Because he's pouring his life out for Jesus. In the same way, like, do we do that with our time? If I were to look at your calendar, look at your schedule, is it one? Does it show an affection for Christ that I'm going to give everything to him? With your family, are you giving your life away at home? You know, I give everything for my kids' happiness. Like, I will give everything for my kids' happiness, but I don't know if I give everything to point them to the greatest joy, and that's Jesus. And here's what I mean by that. My kids, when they started playing basketball, I love basketball immediately. When they're like 5 years old or whatever and can play basketball, I coach their team. Do you know what coaching 5-year-olds in basketball is like? It's like, It's like coaching a team of half lobotomized cats, right? Like that is pretty good. I mean, not my kids, like they're like Michael Jordan. But anyway, like that's pretty much my experience. And you know what? I didn't complain once. I didn't bat an eye at it, and I would do it 1,000 times over because I will give everything for their happiness. But do I put that much effort in pointing them to the source of their eternal happiness? It's a little bit harder. It takes a little bit more work. But will I do that? Like when I'm tired at night, it's time to get them in bed. The finish line is right there in front of me. I can put them in bed and then I can, you know, go veg out or whatever, or watch sports or whatever I got to do. And I'm tired. Do I put effort into, I'm going to pray with them. I'm going to read them that Bible story. We're going to talk about things that matter. At the dinner table, you know, it's really easy turning the TV on. That's super easy, right? Putting something on like for them to watch and then like, okay, maybe they'll stay in their seats for the entire dinner. You know what's hard? Not doing that. You know what's hard? Preparing to talk to them about something that matters, to make sure that they're meaningfully connected to you and meaningfully connected to God. That's difficult. But do I pour my life out like that for my family? So again, our goal is to waste our lives for Him, to give extravagant, costly worship with everything in our lives. And what does that produce? What does that produce? Look there in verse 3. Mary, therefore, took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard, anointed the feet of Jesus, wiped His feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. A fragrance was created. And this fragrance, I mean, think about it. It must have been stuck in the disciples' beards and stuck in their clothing. If you ever visited your grandmother, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like my grandmother, I don't know if she bathes in water or just perfume, but it's definitely, perfume is in the mix, right? And when I leave there, I smell like my grandmother, or I smell like Elizabeth Taylor, I guess, to be more accurate. But anyway, and so they must have smelled like that. And this smell must have reminded them of the value of Jesus, of how much she gave for Jesus. When the others smelled that smell on her, she had a story to tell, which showed how valuable Jesus was. So what does fragrance do? When we smell fragrance, what does it do? It creates desire. I mean, every perfume commercial tells you what? You wear this, people will desire you, right? What, like Axe body spray. You wear this, people will desire you. If you love anyone who uses Axe body spray, stop them, because that is not what happens, all right? People will desire to know someone else, right? But anyway, that's the goal. And you think about the fragrance of an aroma coming off of a dessert, right? I will eat anything with cinnamon on it, anything. Give me one of these chairs, put cinnamon on it. I'll probably nibble on it, right? Like, I love it. But as soon as I smell something like that, it creates a desire. It creates a hunger in me. I want that. In the same way, our extravagant worship of God by wasting our lives, it creates a unique fragrance, something that stands out, something that's not like everything else you see. Mary, it stopped everybody in the room. It's written about in all four Gospels. It created this moment that it stood out. And it was inspiring, and it created a hunger in people to be like her. And so when someone's incredibly generous to meet the needs of other people, that's a fragrance that stands out. It makes me want what they have. I want to be like that. When I see somebody suffer well for the glory of God, it creates a fragrance that creates a desire in me. I want to be like that. I want to know God like you know Him. I think about, for example, John Patton. He let it be known that he and his new bride were going to move to bring the gospel to the cannibals in the South Sea Islands. And an old man in his church said, "You'll be eaten by cannibals." And he said it every time he brought it up. He said, "You'll be eaten by cannibals." Finally, Patton grew exasperated and replied, "My dear sir, you're getting up in years and soon will be laid in the grave and eaten by worms. If I can but live and die honoring the Lord Jesus, it doesn't matter to me whether I'm eaten by cannibals or by worms. And on resurrection day, my body will arise as fair as yours." When I hear somebody willing to give their life like that in service of God for everything, to say, "I will be eaten by cannibals, fine, but I will give my life to God." When I hear things like that, that is a fragrance. There's something there that creates a desire in me. It stands out, and I want to be like that. I want to have that type of devotion. And that's the truth that we're celebrating today, is that as we give our lives to God like that, in every area of our lives, it'll create this aroma of Christ. People will smell it on us. So do people smell the sweet aroma of Jesus on you? Or do they smell greed or selfishness? Or do they smell political affiliation or division or conflict or laziness? Or do they smell the American dream on you? Or do they smell your ego? What do they smell? Do they smell the aroma of Christ? Because again, when we're at that point like Mary, where we say, God, you can have it all because you are worthy of it all. When we sit at his feet, when we give him thanks and we see his value and we waste our lives on him, God uses that to create an aroma. To wake people up and to draw people to himself. Let me pray for us. God, I know I'm not the only one in the room that wants this. I want to waste my life on you. I want to pour it all out on you. And so, God, my prayer for my brothers and sisters in this room today is that they would be in that same place. They would be ready to pour it out for you. That, God, if they've been holding back financially, they would pour it out for you. They'd be generous for you. If they've been holding back socially, that they would forget themselves and they would pour it out for you. If they've been holding back physically, if they've been holding back in their families, wherever, that, God, they would just pour it out. They would say, you can have it all because you deserve it all. And so, God, I pray that you would help us with the discipline of spending time at your feet this week. Give us that discipline this week. Give us that inclination to do so this week, to spend time at your feet and to constantly give thanks. And, Lord, may that inspire a deep and extravagant worship in us that would give you everything. We love you. It's in Jesus' name. Amen.